From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, May 26, 2017. And on this day, Governor Paula Page is releasing 17 prisoners early through conditional commutation orders. We'll have the details. And regulators say northeast coral beds are threatened by commercial fishing. Lobstermen are looking to protect the beds and their livelihoods. That story and more in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou. JoeBornstein.com. And by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
First tonight, Governor Paula Page has allowed the early release of 17 prisoners through conditional commutation orders. That's according to his office. Steve Missler has details.
The governor's action follows the recent announcement that he's been reviewing the release of an unknown number of prisoners deemed to be lower-risk offenders. The LePage administration billed the orders as an effort to modernize the prison system and bolster the workforce. The commutations were also viewed as part of the governor's plan to shut down the Downey's Correctional Facility in Machiasport, but it appears that the administration is backing off that effort. The orders, LePage's first since taking office over 6 years ago, have been applauded by the ACLU of Maine and criticized by others protesting his bid to shut down the Downey's Correctional Facility. The commutations are conditional, which means the released prisoners must adhere to strict guidelines or risk returning to prison. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
One woman cheering Governor LePage's decision is Carol Blakeney of Cumberland.
You know, to be honest with you, I wasn't a big LePage fan until now.
Blakeney says her son has been told he is among several inmates at the Bolduc Correctional Facility in Warren, whose sentence is being commuted by the governor. Bolduc is a minimum security facility where prisoners typically spend the remainder of their sentences before being released. Blakeney says her son was supposed to serve another year for burglary and eluding a police officer. Now she's hoping he could be coming home as early as this weekend.
For the obvious reasons, I am like the happiest right now. I'm the happiest person in the entire world. And I think it's really a great thing for everybody. And if people just knew how much money they're saving in taxes, you know, there's a lot of job openings right now that aren't filled.
Blakeney says she's convinced her 24-year-old son is a different person than when he first entered prison 2 years ago. And she says when he gets out, he's already got a job lined up. Parents, students, and community members from across Lewiston shared their grief in an emotional meeting last night following the suicide of a 13-year-old student. Robbie Feinberg has more.
The mood was somber inside Lewiston's Green Ladle, where about 200 residents gathered to talk about the death of 13-year-old Ani Graham earlier in the week. Some students said they wanted everyone to remember Graham for who she was, bright and accomplished, while others said the community needs to do a better job supporting students who might be at risk. Holding back tears, Lewiston High School senior Bradley Matthews told the story of two of his friends who he says were bullied in recent years.
Both of these friends of mine, I might not even have today because of those things, but they were lucky enough to have people to reach out to.
Mostly, though, community members wanted parents and teachers to come together. Over the past few days, Graham's parents have publicly shared the family's struggle to find help from her school and mental health service agencies after their daughter had been labeled as at risk. Both parents and educators say they want to bridge this divide going forward. In a press release on Thursday, Lewiston Superintendent Bill Webster said that in recent days he'd spoken with Graham's father, who had offered suggestions on how the school should change its policies to better help students who may be at risk of suicide. Webster said the district was currently considering the proposals. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And this is Maine Public Radio. The parents of Ani Graham say their daughter's story reveals a complete breakdown in Maine's mental health system. They say there should be a distinct protocol to help kids at risk of suicide and properly trained providers who are able to help. Patty White has more.
13-year-old Ani Graham was smart but playful, her parents say. She was in advanced math. She liked art and writing, especially, says her dad Matt, poetry.
And many of the poems were written for her mother, mostly just to say how special mom was and She was very caring. She wouldn't let us buy her gifts, so to speak, for birthdays. She'd make us buy stuff for the pet shelter.
But about a year and a half ago, Ani started to struggle with depression, says her mom, Rosie. She was cutting herself.
She was saying that she couldn't sleep and that all these thoughts kept coming to her head and that she was really, really sad. And I let her know that wasn't typical and that wasn't normal. She should be able to sleep and she shouldn't have this severe sadness. I said, you need to see a counselor. We need to get you some help.
But the Grahams say that proved harder than expected. They say many counselors didn't accept children or the family's health insurance. But after a few weeks and many phone calls, they found a counselor. And Rosie says Ani had weekly visits.
She saw her for about 18 months. And about 2 months ago, Ani really told me that the thoughts were getting worse and that she was really scared.
The Grahams took her to the Behavioral Emergency Department at St. Mary's Hospital in Lewiston, and doctors recommended that she be admitted. But Ani told her parents she didn't want to stay in the hospital, and as a compromise, she agreed to start taking medication. As they prepared to leave the hospital, Rosie says doctors told her that Ani needed a certain kind of therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy. That wasn't what the current counselor was doing.
That's where I got really upset because I'm thinking, why am I hearing this for the first time?
Rosie and Matt scrambled to find this kind of counseling for Ani. Matt says he went to Lewiston Middle School, where Ani was a student.
And I said, we're desperate. We need help. We cannot do this any longer by ourselves. You have to know what's going on.
The school guidance counselor recommended a local mental health provider, and Matt called to make an appointment.
And they basically said, after kind of hemming and hawing, that there really isn't anything. We could try to find a cognitive behavioral health therapist, but they only had two people on their staff that were trained to do that, and their caseloads were beyond, you know, taking in any new patients.
The Grahams also went to Ani's pediatrician's office to see if they would prescribe medication. One of the doctors did, but the Grahams say he did not offer therapy services, just medication.
And so it went back to, it's someone else's problem. And the counsel, when you keep pointing this to counselors that aren't equipped or want to do this or want to take our insurance, we were just stuck.
The Grahams continued to search for a cognitive behavioral therapist. About 3 weeks ago, they finally found one. Ani had two appointments, but on Monday, she wrote on a school assignment that she didn't want to live anymore. The school called Ani's parents to come pick her up, and Matt says Rosie brought Ani to the pediatrician, who said the appointment went well.
He said, it looks like we've turned the corner. She seems happy. I'm going to send her home. You know, she's fine.
The rest of the day was good, Matt says.
Ani actually was socializing with us a little bit more. She cleaned her room, which makes no sense whatsoever. And we thought, wow, we're having a good night.
They went to bed. When Matt woke up the next morning at 6:30, he knocked on Ani's door. She didn't answer. That's when he discovered his daughter had killed herself. Since her death, classmates have also said that Ani was bullied. The Grahams say Ani's depression made her especially vulnerable and that the school should do more to address bullying. But where they see the biggest failure is with the mental health system.
All the professionals, quote unquote, that were dealing with us during this crisis were not professionals in suicide intervention, prevention, any of that.
Even though Matt and Rosie were very worried about Ani, they say they ultimately put their trust in the people they sought help from.
When all the professionals told us, don't worry, she's going to grow out of this, or take her home, give her the day off, or just put her on this med and we'll see if that works. As a parent, you have an inclination to say, well, the professionals don't think it's a big deal. The professionals don't think she's going to hurt herself.
Rosie says she wishes she had slept in her daughter's room Monday night. The Grahams also wish that schools had clear systems in place to help when someone is at risk of killing themselves.
If this was a bomb threat, they have protocols and steps and procedures in place to make people be safe and ensure that they're safe before they send them back home or back to the school or whatever the case may be. This was a threat on her life to hurt herself, and there's nothing.
Parents, they say, are left to navigate crises in the mental health system on their own, a system, they say, that's not equipped to help some of those who need it most. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And if you or someone you know is in crisis, the number for the Maine Crisis Hotline is 888-568-1112. Again, that's 888-568-1112. With the end of the session in sight, the legislature's Appropriations Committee had hoped to wrap up work on a two-year state budget next week. But Governor Paul LePage has just handed them an extra assignment in the form of a 133-page change package. As Mal Leary reports, it contains several major proposals that lawmakers are just now seeing for the first time.
Usually a so-called change package fixes mistakes in a budget plan and may have one or two new initiatives. But the LePage document is more sweeping. It proposes only partial funding for state aid to county jails, for the Downeast Correctional Center, and indigent legal services, and calls for studies to be done on all three issues. The administration would report those findings to the legislature just 2 weeks before the funding for the programs would run out. Republican Senator Roger Cates of Augusta says that's not an acceptable way to manage legal services for the poor, which he says is a constitutional responsibility. Cates says at a minimum, the state needs to fund the program for a full 2 years and appropriate money to pay bills already owed.
We will appropriate the money for the rest of this fiscal year through June 30th because lawyers are now working and not getting paid. And secondly, we will fund it whatever level we believe is appropriate for the entire biennium to fulfill this constitutional responsibility.
Others on the committee say that funding for county jails and the Downeast Correctional Center should be appropriated, even if the legislature changes its plans for either next year. The governor's change package also proposes to allow more charter schools and to shift money from general purpose aid to local schools to the university or community college systems. He wants that money to pay for the cost of remedial courses for students who are attending a university or community college. Westbrook Democrat Drew Gatteen, who co-chairs the committee, says such major policy shifts do not belong in a change package.
I don't think it's really very reasonable to expect that the Appropriations and Financial Affairs Committee is the right committee to be looking at that, and certainly not the right committee to be looking at something that make such fundamental changes in education policy.
Several committee members expressed concerns about even trying to consider adding such proposals to a budget that's already chock full of controversy. Some big basic issues, such as the overall level of school funding and taxes to pay for schools and other programs, are far from settled, and current funding for state government runs out at the end of June. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Finally today, the fragile deep-sea corals that populate the canyon walls and basins in the Gulf of Maine provide habitat for many species of fish, as well as baby lobster, crabs, and squid. The New England Fisheries Management Council has concluded that the northeast coral beds are threatened when they're disturbed by commercial fishing operations, and it's weighing new restrictions that could affect Maine. The council held a public hearing in Ellsworth last night where lobstermen spoke in support of a plan that protects coral colonies while still allowing them to haul their traps. A.J. Higgins has more.
Most of the lobstermen who spoke agree that the coral beds in the Gulf of Maine play an important role in the overall health of the marine ecosystem. And most, such as Cranberry Isles fisherman Jack Merrill, think that Maine lobstermen and the coral beds have been getting along well for decades.
It is evident to me that the marine corals in these zones appear to be thriving, which means that they are successfully coexisting with the trap fishery that's been there for many years.
The major coral beds are located off the Georges Banks, and there are two areas about 25 miles off the main coast that have been identified as coral protection zones: the Outer Scudic Ridge off the southeast Hancock County coast and Mount Desert Rock off Mount Desert Island. The area is regularly fished, and Maine Department of Marine Resources Commissioner Pat Kelleher says he supports an alternative plan that would prohibit trawlers from working the ocean bottom in the two targeted regions, but would also allow lobster trap fishing in the regions.
Lobster fishing is the economic backbone of the Downeast coastal communities, and each of these proposed coral protection areas represents an important fishing ground for over 50 vessels from approximately 15 communities. And many of these vessels fish these areas throughout the majority of the year.
Some industry groups, such as the Maine Lobstermen's Association, say that banning lobstering in these areas would have a $9 million impact on the local economy, and it would only push fishermen into other areas where gear conflicts could erupt. Hilton Turner, president of the Downeast Lobstermen's Association, says it would be best to minimize the potential for territory disputes.
Fishermen that usually fish around each other on a regular basis are aware of their fishing styles, such as how they lay out their gear. When forced to fish around other fishermen who practices they are not familiar with, this can lead to gear conflict, which of late has become a problem as it is in these areas. We really don't think we want to add any more fuel to this fire.
And lobstermen and DMR officials say if lobstermen are forced to move their gear into other areas, that could create a new potential danger to endangered right whales. David Cousins is president of the Maine Lobstermen's Association.
What that's going to create is a wall of rope around those areas that is not going to be good for right whales. And we've worked our asses off for the last 20 years to try to accommodate fishing and right whales, and this would be a disaster for the fishermen and the whales.
The New England Fisheries Management Council is scheduled to issue a final decision in Portland on June 22nd. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Friday, May 26, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.